Welcome to the pod, everyone. A shout out to SGS.
Hey, Rusty, why are we partnering with SGS?
Some good people there. Pretty excited about their sports coaching courses and sports courses. Keen to make them industry ready, so when people leave, they're able to go and transfer it to any kind of industries, coaching, teaching, being an analyst, business, whatever it might be. So I think it's pretty exciting times, really.
So what's so special about their degree courses that others won't be doing?
I think it'll be lots of real good partnerships, opportunities for people to get into different contexts and learn and practice. It'll be feel very applied. People will be stretched and supported and will leave ready to just go and thrive in the big old world out there.
SGS College is the home of Bristol's higher education sports programmes. The programmes are designed to develop unique, innovative and creative sports practitioners ready for industry. Do you want to be a coach or teacher of the future? Start your journey here at SGS College and become more than just a graduate. Visit sgscol.ac.uk
cool.
To apply now.
Live on the pod, three people. It's a three pod, whatever the word is. Hey fellas, how are you doing?
Good, yeah, very good. How are you?
Yes.
Good. So we got a man with boats. We got a man with a coffee machine.
Yeah.
And Benji, you've got a. You look like you're in a prison, quite frankly.
I'm in my kitchen. We're doing some. Been doing some DIY. So this is the room with the best wall.
Strong wall. Do you guys want to introduce yourself quickly and maybe? And Tom, when we get to you speak, maybe you introduce yourself last. You can explain how we all know each other now. So Tom, you're going to go last. So it's either Sinan or Ben, one of the two.
All right, then I'll go. I'm Sinan. I've been coaching rugby for 17 years or so. I'm level 3 now. I've been coaching recently at Ruislip Rugby Club, and now Middlesex, and at a school in Hillingdon as well. I'm also an executive coach as well, so I do one-to-one work with clients to get them through their working days, especially now during COVID. So yeah, that's me. I'm a coach.
Nice, cool. Benji, live from prison.
Yeah. I've been coaching since 2014. Prior to that, I was an office worker, social media manager. I saw an advert, a really vague advert on LinkedIn for, it said, do you like sports? Would you like to coach it? I just pressed liked. I liked it. Got a response from that. Went and did some like helping out at a school in Birmingham for 2 days and then got the job. Got offered a job and I didn't get back to my office job the following Monday. So I think I'm the only person who's ever got a job through LinkedIn.
You're not. So Deborah Fleming, just being made redundant with England Sevens, she rang me yesterday and sent me a CV. She changed her LinkedIn profile to green, looking for a job. Her old company rang her up and gave her a promotion and a pay rise. So you are one of two people to have done that. But that's a cool story.
Yeah. Absolutely love it.
And what do you miss about going into the office every day?
It kind of relates back to like the magic benefit. So engaging with people in a cool way. So on social media, I would just search for out there stuff and respond to people. So our biggest highlight was getting a response from The Rock.
Oh, nice. From Dwayne.
Sorry?
From Dwayne.
Yeah, from Dwayne. Yeah. Got a response from him, so that was the career highlight. Nothing really topped that.
Wow, nice. Oh, I'm sure we'll delve into that in a bit. And Tom Luddington, how did you end up on this call?
Well, I advertised a magic workshop, I guess, and a mutual friend of ours, Russell Nathan, I think, he knew that your coaching company was called was to do with magic, so he was like, you need to meet this guy Russell, he's amazing. And so we had a chat, didn't we? We put it off for a few weeks, but we eventually had a chat, and then I said, look, I'm running this course, if you want to do some, learn some proper magic, then this is it. So yeah, I'm a professional magician, full-time magician, member of the Magic Circle, and I've been full-time for about 4 years now. and reinventing my business through the pandemic and taking it online, really. So teaching some magic skills, but also doing Zoom shows for businesses and families and individual, you know, sort of family groups. So little magic shows online and teaching a little bit of magic for those people. I'm also a coach so prior to getting into the magic, I was a coach and I taught outdoor sports and mostly sea kayaking, surfing, climbing, those sorts of things here in Pembrokeshire. I'm in West Wales. And I sort of fascinated, really, coming from coaching into becoming a magician and how the two relate and how there are so many similarities between the two, really, in terms of approaching groups of people and entertaining them and getting magic to really work for people so that they have a great time, you know. So yeah, just that's why I'm here. That's me.
Nice. And if we hear any waves, it's because you're on a boat, which I'm pretty
sure. That's right. Yeah, I've been on lots of courses as well. I've been on Tony Robbins' Unleash the Power Within, and I've been probably spending too much time looking at memes on social media about living your dreams and so on. And my wife and I have decided we're going to sail up and buy a sailing boat and sail around the world. So we're really close to doing that. We should be setting off in about 10 days' time, given a weather forecast that's correct. And yeah, so I'm living on a boat right now, out on a swinging morning sailing boat. We're going out sailing every other day just to test the boat and make sure everything's good and do the final thing. So it's a busy time. And the hope is that I can keep doing magic whilst travelling to wonderful, far-flung places, you know. So that's the dream.
Nice. And I love the way Sinan's nodding. I do worry that you'll be partway into the Atlantic and you'll discover this little fella under the boat with his coffee machine. Like, doing really good magic.
I
mean,
I laugh, but it's going to happen.
Nice. Well, look, we've done, so the last 2 weeks we did three magic sessions a week, so six magic sessions. Come on, lads, tell me what you've learned. Tell me what the experience was like. What were your best bits? What did you do in between? I want to know, what was the impact of Tom Luddington on your lives?
I miss it. I miss those.
I'll be honest, I actually miss the structure of, it's my one Zoom that is, it's actually about really, really about me trying something completely different.
Yeah.
No, I accept that entirely. I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't have necessarily an expectation. You put the call out and I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like that just sounds like crazy fun. So let's just do it. With zero expectation of what was going to happen. I mean, I think the structure of the course, 2 weeks worth of just 1 hour every other day, was lovely because I got to practice hard in between and I really, really got into a point where I was working as hard as I could with my little hands to kind of make things appear and disappear, which was really tricky. But I guess when I first turned up, and this was my kind of point to Tom, was how do you engage an audience in such a way as to kind of captivate them and draw them in and then make them walk away going, this guy was awesome, or the thing that happened was awesome. And that for me was kind of the crux of it. Now, I got lost a little bit during the way, kind of on those kind of finer skills, and then I suddenly thought, well, is this not how we should be doing things? I offer you something to learn and you go away and learn it, or we see what something's meant to look like and we go and try and replicate it, say, as a player. So that for me suddenly became, actually, that's the audience now being captured into the way things are meant to be, and then coming out the other side wanting to be better at it. So that was pretty cool for me.
Nice. And one of my reflections also was, I thought I was practicing quite a lot in between lessons because I was really engaged in taking responsibility for it. And then it appeared that everyone else was probably even more engaged than me. And that would definitely be something we would want from the people that we coach. I also was, I also imagine you're now running like magic shows every night, Sinan, because you're so keen.
Well, I mean, look, it's, I really don't think that I'm anywhere, like the ones that I can do. Yes, I do. I'm working on things like storytelling. So Tom's a great example. So, you've got a show and the show has to kind of have like a beginning, a middle and an end, and how do you end it in such a way to kind of, you know, leave people with something to think about or something to kind of go away with? And I thought that was super cool as well. So I've been really captivated and in my own mind of making sure that I can replicate that, so that at the end of the day, I haven't just gone cards and then run off. So that was amazing.
Nice. I think we'll come back to storytelling, because Fletcher gave me some feedback when I was doing a trick that I needed better stories, because the trick was taking like 20-30 seconds and I was just fluffing around a bit, whereas I did the cotton trick with my daughter Tom, and I said, just tell me your, so you did a brilliant story on that one, and I said, tell me about who your best friends are, and we'll cut off a piece of cotton for each of them. And so, and she was really engaged, and I said, like, okay, AV, cool. And she, and yeah, and one for Matilda as well, and we've got AV, Matilda, and they've all been split up. And so, I mean, what are your reflections, Tom, when you listen there to what Sinan said? I mean, how many marks out of 10 are you giving him?
It's so good that you guys practiced put in so much effort between the courses. And I guess I'm a little gutted that I didn't get to really see that fruition of that. And so I'm also missing the sessions, just because I like to see some follow-up. As a coach, you want to see how people are getting on. And when I run the course in the past in person, and it's more of it's a half day every week for 8 weeks, a whole half day. And whilst I can have more people on the course, it's a lot longer to get. I get to show people, and then I get to go around and do the big practice bit, which is so important with coaching, right? So it kind of broke some of my coaching rules to just teach you a load of stuff, and then just hope that you would be engaged enough to go away and practice it, without actually having time on the sessions themselves to really do that, because we only have an hour together. So really encouraged to hear that you guys have been practicing. And I'm really also excited to hear that you're thinking about storytelling, because that's what it's all about. You know, you've got to write your own stories. My stories, my scripting, isn't going to be right for you. I mean, you're welcome to my words. I happily share them because they're from the heart, and that's me. But you can use them. And maybe, and this is a lot of discussion amongst magicians. They say you shouldn't copy other magicians. But of course, we do when we start. And when Darren Brown first came out, loads of people were copying him. When Dynamo first came out, they were all copying Dynamo with his card switches and stuff. But a lot of those magicians then slowly become their own person. You have to. You just become your own person. So great story with your daughter's friends. That's a lovely way of doing the Gypsy Thread, the Torn and Restored Thread trick, because it's engaging and it's simple and it makes them think. Okay, and then, yeah, then they can all come together again at the end. That's beautiful. So, yeah, anything like that. And I think that when you're learning magic, this you get to the point of unconscious competence with your technique, you know, that we all know about that with coaching, where you can do it without looking. You know, you can just get on with the sleights and the technique and the skills and the actual trick. That's the point where you can then relax and focus on your storytelling. But also what you realize at that point is that you can then enjoy other people's smiles, make eye contact a lot more, and be engaged with how they're feeling. And that's really, really nice when you get to that stage of not going, oh God, it's the fourth card down from the thing, and then I've got to do that with this, and then this, oh, and I've got to try and talk to you at the same time. When you reach that level of unconscious competence with your technique, and that's why keeping it simple in the first place. So the first week we did, I hope that you felt that it's like, oh wow, there's great magic here, but it's super easy to do. And there's other magic that's much harder to do, but there is magic out there for everyone. It doesn't have to be super hard, right? It can be really easy and really powerful, so that you can immediately try and get a great story in there.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna come to you in a second, Ben. But stuff that resonated with me from what you just said then was, like, I had some really quick success, which I liked. I needed it, and actually, I had some options, so I didn't want to play with the balls anymore, quite frankly, and therefore you adapted. So you abandoned ship on the balls, and we spent some of the, because we had a finite amount of time. And yeah, definitely made me think about, like, I was just really engaged in deliberate practice away from here, to the extent that my family were getting really annoyed with me. And then the last thing you said that really resonated is, I think it's an evolution that most coaches go through, is we copy a bit of Dynamo, we copy a bit of Darren Brown, we copy a bit of Wayne Smith, we copy a bit of Stu Lancaster, and then we find out how it works for us and we become more authentic and we get to understand ourselves. And the stories you tell won't be the stories I tell, because if I told your stories, they would sound, they just wouldn't be natural. Benji, what are you? What was your kind of reflections, apart from you're still missing it?
Kind of echoing what everyone's already said in terms of like the journey we've been on. But, you know, the way that instant way you can build trust with someone, I mentioned it on our introduction call to Tom. I said, you know, a magician's probably one of the few people that if they said, give me your phone or your watch, you'd give it to them and know it'd come back safe, because they just have that ability to build that rapport straight away. And if you can do that as a coach, then you're going to get that buy-in. You're going to get more of those wow moments. You know, if when you're delivering your session, you can get the buy-in that they themselves have achieved what you wanted them to achieve, rather than them thinking, oh yeah, I pulled that off, but that's because the coach told me what to do. If you can flip it around and make it think they did it, it's going to have that wow impact.
Yeah, I like, someone told me recently, it's much more powerful when people realise stuff for themselves. You've just got me thinking that you're going to be now asking kids for their watches and phones. what type of stuff did you notice about Tom? So how did you think he created trust so quickly?
The eye contact, because he's got that unconscious competence, he was making eye contact with us while so we were engaged in his eyes whilst he was doing various tricks, sleight of hand. You know, that kind of stuff, which I can now spot. I've been watching some Penn and Teller, and I've been picking up when they fool people in the audience now.
Your revision on Penn and Teller, mate. You are, he's got the bear traps out now. Seriously, different level. What did you notice, Sinan, anything about Tom that...
So I think his demeanour is fabulous, in the sense that he knows who he is and he knows what he does. And it kind of like goes back to some of the points about his storytelling. There's an authenticity there that immediately comes out. You know, we're calm. We're just kind of getting on with it. We know that, you know, the introduction of it all was quite simple. And I think his initial kind of hook was that little belief diagram.
Well,
I remember that. So we say, you know, if you believe, then you will invest time and effort, and hence money, and then hence, you know, we've all been on Amazon buying stuff now. So clearly we believe, because we now have put the time, the effort, and the money to get extra bits. And So we believe, you know, instantly now there's a belief to say, oh, look, I'm buying into this. I'm buying into this guy. I'm buying into what he's going to tell me, because there's a thing that I'm going to get out of this. So all of a sudden I'm like, I'm ready. Okay, come on, let's start, so that I can do more, and I can do more with you, because there is that just, yeah.
Yeah, Fletch talks about trust being about character and competence. So you would automatically have us on competence. And as Benji said, like, I'm still looking at my hands while shuffling. I'm consciously incompetent.
At least you're conscious of it, though. That's the thing, isn't it? And you're on the journey, and knowing that is pleasing, you know. And I make mistakes myself all the time, and that's fine. We did talk about that too, about being prepared to just fail badly, and how people will judge you not on if you fail, but on how you react to that. So, and with magic, it's embarrassing, right? There's a lot of people look like, oh, I tried magic and it's really hard, and everyone laughed at me because I got it wrong. And so then they have the belief that they set up this sort of false limiting belief, if you want to use Tony's word, about the fact that they can't, you know, in inverted commas, do magic, you know, whereas, of course, then that's going to create a negative downward spiral. But yeah, good that you know that you're incompetent. That's something to constantly work on, looking at your hands when you're shuffling.
That's something I've experienced before, Tom. So before, you know, I've tried to learn magic before, like I've got a magic set or even watch YouTube. I tried it and failed. You know, I'd read through the comments to see what I might have done wrong that made me fail. And it didn't really give me any positive reinforcement, but you just gave me that desire to keep going and learn more.
Yeah, I like your, I like your vulnerability. I was going to ask you, Tom, tell me about something that I really liked. Been chatting a bit to a storyteller in Bristol called Claire Murphy, and she said one of the things that they have to experience is dying on stage. I'm like that. Have you had dying on stage moments? Because I'm sure you can say that now you're in the magic circle.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are embarrassing, but they're way more worse for you if you really feel it. You know, so I've had a spectator up on stage standing on a chair, and we were doing a card across thing. It was a young chap, and I asked him to look at a bunch of cards. So I held out a series of cards, and without me looking, said, "Look at one of those, memorize it, and blah, blah." And I got to the point where one of my 10 cards would become 9 cards, and it would magically disappear and end up in, he had 10 cards and they would become 11, and the 11th card was, you know, was the one he was thinking of, only thinking of. It's a great trick, works every time. It's almost self-working, and yet somehow on this day, it had gone wrong. And the difficult thing was that he felt he'd done something wrong. And so then you might think you're dealing with your own embarrassment or something going wrong with it. But it shows vulnerability. It shows that things go wrong, and how you handle that situation, how you handle that spectator, make sure that they don't feel bad. Oh, no, nothing to do with you. It's a silly one. Let's do something else. Let's move on. Immediately have a backup plan. This is something in terms of coaching in rugby. I have no idea, no coach rugby, but coaching rock climbing or coaching, well, magic is the same. You've got to think about what if. You've heard that phrase, I'm sure, a lot in coaching. What if it goes wrong? And certainly when you're doing a stressful thing like doing your exam for the Magic Circle, which is a 10-minute piece of magic for the collected members, you know, you can sort of think, well, I'm probably going to be a bit nervous, so what if? And then you answer all the what if questions. What if I drop all my cards on the floor, haven't got a second pack in the other pocket ready? What if I'm doing something with coins and one drops and rolls underneath everyone's chairs, such to the point where it's rolled off and I can't get it back? Do I have another one? Where is it? Have I practiced, when I drop that coin, bringing the other one into play flawlessly? And so you can alleviate a lot of those embarrassing moments and stressful times, but they're going to come and get you at some point. And at that point that they really do come and get you, how you react is key. It's literally like you just have to laugh it off and move on to the next thing. And it won't be seen by the audience as a serious thing. And even to the point, as I talked to you about planned failure, you know, Darren Brown, he will put in on purpose failures early on in his set, in the opening part of his set on stage routines. On purpose, he'll get something wrong so that the audience will be like, okay, he's only human. And that actually makes him more even better, you know? Everyone's engaged. So don't be afraid of failure. It's a human thing. It's how you react to that that you have to practice. And if you want to really limit it, then think through your what ifs.
Yeah, maybe I'm more Darren Brown than I thought. I'm definitely doing lots of failure. What I really liked your phrase around abandoned ship, and I was going to ask Ben and Sinan, how much have you practiced in front of other people? And I don't know if you're anything like me, and I know Tom Wanders, but seriously, my family are my toughest.
Ruthless. Cutthroat.
What do you mean? Why? What's been going on?
My wife she's a scientist, so she just wants to analyze everything. So even, you know, I get a pack of cards out and I'll just handle them in a certain way. She's like, why have you done that? Genuinely, I just got them out to get them familiar in my hands.
Yeah. I'm just doing a Rosetta Shuffle, you should have said. I mean, it's nothing wrong with this. Pretty simple.
I did a trick the other day where I had zero involvement, made her do all the work, and she wasn't impressed. She was like, well, I'm going to try and work out how you've done it now.
No,
maybe that's because I didn't have the wild face as well.
Maybe, but maybe also she was impressed, but she just didn't verbalise that or show that. And sometimes the people who, I've had the thing where my brother will look at me like sideways like that, and he won't react or be smiley or happy or be amazed outwardly. But afterwards he'll come up to me and say, God, I really did get me that one. I love it. Like, how do you do it? In fact, I don't even want to know how you did it. When he started saying that to me, then I knew I'd gone up a level. But like I said to all of you, the most important thing to know is that your family and really close friends, but really it's your family, it's just never going to work. you know, magic is for sharing with people you don't know so well, and that's where you can get a really good, you know, good engagement. And that's why magic's so cool, because you can use it to bridge that boundary, that so, you know, that social divide between different groups of people. You can literally walk over to anyone and say, you know, good evening, how's it going? You know, you guys want to see some magic? It just is what it is. It's bold and it's scary, but it's a lovely bridge. It's an excuse to go out and speak to people.
How's it been for you in front of the family, Sinan?
So I spent the weekend with my parents, and I did four tricks with them, and now my mum thinks I'm some sort of like scary genie magician kind of a person. So that was quite cool. I enjoyed that. But yeah, anyone close, they were with a friend very recently, and she was just like, I'm like, look at my eyes. No, look at my cards, looking at what's happening here. And it's absolutely right. It's impossible, because they're looking for they know what you're doing. They know, they can see where you're looking. They can see where you're thinking, even if you are like super like professional about it. They're just the little kind of twitch that you might do just kind of gives the kind of like top card away, or the magic of it. And I think
magicians talk about it, telegraphing a move. It's called telegraphing a move, and you can do it with general public too. If you're just thinking about what you're doing, almost is too much. If you're having to think, it's too much.
But that's
friends and family know in your line.
And that's where if I did have like an interesting story to tell with it, then, you know, that's a distraction. But it's also an engagement and I think
I'm lacking stories. That's my feedback to myself.
Mm. And here's a really good thing that I didn't do with you guys then. So one of the great ways to link a magic trick with a story is to write down, let's say, 8 or 10 things that you love doing on one side of a piece of paper, like a list. So it might be rugby, it might be going out on pizza, it might be skiing, it might be snowboarding, whatever it is, you know, going out on my bike, skateboarding, spending time with the kids. Just write down a load of stuff that you like doing on the left, and on the right, write down a different bunch of tricks. So it might be the Ace Assembly, the Sponge Balls, the Gypsy's Thread, the various ones that we learned. And then just, you can either randomly draw a line between one and the other across the page, and say, right, how am I going to link going, you know, my passion for bicycles, renovating bicycles, with a trick on an Ace Assembly? What story could link it to? Or like, how does snowboarding link with this? Because if you're passionate about snowboarding, and you love that feeling of flow and you're flying down a hill or whatever else, or there's some story, maybe a funny story about something that happened to you when you're snowboarding, and you can, literally needs to be nothing to do with the trick. It's more about a case of saying, how could I link that to that? That's a really good way of doing it. And like, just, you know, having other interests and hobbies, and yeah, coaching might be a big one for you guys. Put coaching there. So how can I link coaching to a magic trick? That would be a really easy link. So then, you know, the process of coaching. If I wanted to tell someone who had learning difficulties, whatever, the process I'm going to take them along, how could I achieve that with a magic trick?
I actually think
that magic trick would be suited best to that.
Yeah, I'm going to create a set that's around a typical session. I'm going to do start, ending, some stuff going wrong. What's your favourite trick, Ben, Sinan? Which trick are you overusing at the moment? By the way, so when I deliver to my family, my wife never smiles. And then she just very seriously says to me, you have to tell me how that's done. And so in order to build rapport with her, I've had to give away some secrets, which is stressful, but I apologize. I've had to tell her, look, this is, and it's sad times for me, sad times. What's your favorite trick? Which one are you using the most?
Balls work well.
Which one?
The nothing up my sleeve.
Oh, mate, you doing that, are you?
Well, I've got a 1-year-old.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect.
She, like, getting her to pick cards doesn't really, like...
Yeah.
If I do a card reveal, she doesn't really appreciate that. That's the one that she should have got.
And she's one, she doesn't go, why are you putting your elbow up so high, Rusty? Nice, that's cool. I'm enjoying that. And Sinan, what's your... And you've ordered some new balls, so
I've got some new balls.
You back on the balls, are you?
Because I wanna get better, and yeah, one of them disappeared, but we won't talk about that. My absolute kind of favourite one is them choosing a card and making it appear from the deck,
yeah,
and just rising up with the power of my thought. And impress them with my amazing kind of just connection with them and the skill, and their card will appear. So that one is my absolute favorite. That one works so well. The other one that's good is that kind of telekinesis one, where you can kind of get the... this is the one that kind of got my mum thinking that I was some sort of like...
Oh, it's pretty cool.
Kind of crazy guy, and was a little bit scared almost. I almost frightened her to death with this kind of like moving a spoon on top of a bottle. And I just did it.
Without touching it. It's amazing, like, yeah.
I got my niece to help me with that one. So now she's like a Star Wars force. So I was like, you know, think about using your hand to push.
I love that. That's brilliant.
Get move.
Yeah, you guys are... So have you started to... That was the other thing I was curious about. So generally, Si Stebbings... I've never met him, but he's a great guy. That's all I'm going to say. So, Si Stebbings, big shout out.
Send him a text, right? Yeah.
Have you guys started now adapting stuff to your to yourselves and your context a little bit? So, something I think Tom was very good at is, look, here's some stuff. This is how I do it. This might be useful. You could adapt this. And so, I've probably started to adapt my favorite stuff. Rather, and I probably got rid of the balls, if I'm honest. I've felt very bad. And I'm not doing telekinesis either, but I like the idea of, with a one-year-old, you know, use the force type stuff. Are you guys adapting tricks to your own stuff now?
Yeah. Do you want to go see none and I'll follow?
Well, I'm going to say completely no. I'm not. I'm magpieing. And this is, and this kind of relates like entirely to my coaching journey as well. It was all about magpie and using the things that were done on me, which was just shouting and kicking and screaming and all that sort of stuff. And it's taken me this long, you know, 15, 16, 17 years to be me on the field or whatever. So when it comes to magic, I'm still like unable to do the balls or any of this sort of stuff. I really want to. So for me, it's still, I have to take the baby steps. And because I believe that I can do it, and from the kind of stuff and the way that Tom has kind of presented it to us, I reckon I will have that story. I will have that power to kind of just be able to kind of do it the way that I want to do it, because that's, I am me, and I want to be me, and I want to be able to do it as me, because that's very important. But I also need to be able to do the stuff, which at the moment I can't.
Nice. What about you, Ben? What's been one of the adaptations?
So when I did some reading about Ben Earl, one of the magicians that Tom mentioned.
Not the rugby player.
No, but he was my first thought when Tom said, Ben Earl, great card magician. Is he?
Wow, cool. Let's call him up.
Yeah. So I've adapted that to deliberately go wrong. Well, the spectator thinks I've done it wrong.
Oh, the Ben Earl one is the mathematical equation of where the card is. Is that one or not?
Not this one.
Okay. Because I love that one, but my maths isn't
great. Yeah. It's difficult to explain it and not give too much away.
Okay, don't. But you've been exploring. So what are you thinking, Tom, when you hear this, when at least two of us are going away and practicing stuff and Sinan is still speaking to himself in a way he wouldn't speak to his kids? What do you think?
I just think it's great. I think you know, magic's a bit like a bug, you know, you get bitten by it and then you develop this sort of weird relationship with it and find your path through it, and that's why I want the course to be varied and to touch on different things, you know, string, you know, psychokinesis and levitation and you know, card stuff, sponge stuff, string stuff, and it's just a broad, and some mentalism as well, it's a broad introduction to magic to show you, well, here's all the rooms. You could spend as much time as you want in any one of these rooms. I know lots of magicians who just do cards. There's a guy called Paul Gordon online, very, very sort of prolific on social media. He's a member of the Magic Circle. He's written loads of books on card magic. And he used to do loads of other types of magic, but now he just literally just does cards. And he joked the other day, he said, I had my close-up case stolen the other day, all of my magic for a lifetime of magic on the way to a gig. Luckily, I found a replacement in it. And he's just got a pack of cards. That's it. That's all he ever carries. But he's amazing with cards. So, or you can just do mentalism, or just do this, or just do kids, or just do that. So, you know, my plan was to introduce you to it all in a broad way, and then hopefully you find your own path through it all. You know, yeah, it's such a wonderful thing, magic, to share with the world. The world needs, my motivation for doing it is the world needs more magic, my belief. I think that it needs people to be more communicative, more open to tell great stories. And I think that you guys as coaches and people who are already trying to help humans to be better humans are the right sort of people to learn a bit of extra magic as well, to help you to tell the stories that you want to tell. Bring a bit of extra joy and laughter and a bit of wonder into the world and use magic to tell great 100%. Stories.
Talking of wonder, show me your amazed face. Nice, that's excellent, amazed face. Do you want to, I mean, have people been trying the amazed face? Do you want to explain the theory behind the amazed face, Tom?
I'll explain it, yeah. So when you're showing someone a trick, assuming you've practiced, we talked about the importance of the many stages before you show a trick. But let's assume that you've done all those, you've practiced, you've rehearsed, you've done it all. You've reached unconscious competence and you've tried it on your family and it's starting to work. And then you go out and do it on someone for real. That's at that point then, if it's gone well, you'll create for them a moment of astonishment, a moment of wonder. And that's the bit where something happens that they weren't expecting. It should be surprising because you shouldn't have told them what was going to happen. And when that thing happens and they have that moment of wonder, they'll look up at you probably with a surprised face, you know, which is just like, you've seen the emoji on Facebook. It's just a round, you know, face. You can fake that face really easily. And actually, it's a good one to fake because as a magician, you need to also be a little bit wowed by your own magic. Only for the reason of sharing that moment of wonder with that person. Because if you're looking smug, when they look up at you and you're looking, if you look like, I'm the man, type thing, then that will immediately crush that moment of wonder for that person. Because they're like, oh, right, you weren't surprised. That was surprising. No, even if there's just two of you, you should still be like, you know, and then they'll get it. They'll know that you meant that to happen, but you still do it. And it makes a big difference. It just makes a big difference to people's appreciation of the magic. It doesn't suit everyone, but for me, it took me a while to learn how powerful that was. And I've introduced it into my magic the last few years, especially with kids, do the sponge ball, make a sponge ball appear between your hands. And then as it appears, make eye contact. They'll look at you and they'll be, you know, just have that, whoa, that, you know, just as if it doesn't always work. You know, I've been trying it. I'm amazed myself today. I'm pleased it's worked. I'm excited as well, you know. That adds a huge amount to your magic, as well as not telling them what you're going to do.
There's two things there, and I'm definitely keen to hear your guys using it. I would have ordinarily told people what I was going to do. And once again, that's not my bias when I coach. I almost want people to discover and realize stuff for themselves. That was magic, because your door opened there. That was cool. I found that makes a huge difference. But ordinarily I would go, look, I'm going to make four aces appear. Why would I tell people that? It's like, and the second thing, the amazed face. So 100%, like, I thought, this is ridiculous. And then I did it with my daughter. And it was like, we were both, it made me even more amazed that she was amazed.
It actually works, doesn't it? Because you go, oh, wow, actually, I'm feeling it. You really get that connection.
You mirror the emotion. You can kind of get that intelligence out of it. And that's super cool. Absolutely brilliant. And
it's also teaching you eye contact is important at that moment. You know, they're having that moment of astonishment. And to look up and acknowledge that is good. You know, if you're still head down doing the trick, that's no good. So,
I wonder how many times we're coaching when people do something amazing and we just don't notice it. And if we do notice it, then we don't share in that joy with them, which can be a really powerful moment when someone finally overcomes an obstacle or, you know, and they might just need a little, you know, a little fist pump or they might need a smile, but just us almost trying to match their emotion was something I was thinking a lot about with my coaching. I probably don't do that as well as I could.
Yeah. I think it's a super interesting point you said about how you kind of lay everything out first so that they make sure that they do that and that happens. And you're like, wow. Well, not wow, because you said it was going to happen. So, you know, that's not cool. Whereas if you kind of like, you almost kind of force their hand in a way by setting up something and just letting them go for it, then some magic happens in and amongst the group. That's the point at which they do a thing that they didn't expect they were going to do, or they did a thing that they didn't think they were allowed to do. And they look over and you go, nice, love it. You've done something there. And they're like, okay, cool. I've done a thing. I'm going to do it again. So, you know, putting it back in their hands. And I think, you know, Tom, there was quite a few tricks where, you know, you're handing people cards or you're handing people things and you're saying, this trick is for you to do and for you to achieve something. Yeah. When they achieve it, you go, wow, you did that.
Yeah. Not me. No, I didn't touch the cards. That was
I want to see how lucky you are. That one. I want to see how lucky you are.
Yeah. So exactly.
Comes in as well, because if you're just guiding some, even if you give them the cards and you're guiding them through it, they're still thinking, well, I'm going to get the outcome that they want me to get. But if you're storytelling, they're focusing on the story more than the, you know, shuffle here, cut here, place here, and that increases that amazement even more when they finally, well, they don't know what they're going to get, but when it appears, it's obviously something, wow.
How's your storytelling, Ben? Have you been practicing it?
I've got quite a good one for Gypsy Thread when I go back to school, revolving around kind of year 11 exams and that kind of thing.
Nice, mate. Those kids are going to have a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll all fail their exams, but they'll be amazing.
Nice. What about you guys? Any luck at introducing any comedy into it as well? I mean, it's something I try and do as well as you know, having a silly little thing. I talked to some of you earlier before about, you know, having a card in my mind and, you know, I've got a prediction here, and then you hold it up and it just reads correct. I don't know, you can't see it. You know, so people go, ah, God, damn it, you know, but then you do something after that, you know, so that disarms them. You're trying to be all serious and do some mind reading. And you say, right, think of your card, you've got it in your mind, don't tell me what it is. And then, okay, I've got it, I think I know what it is, and hold this up. But then you have a great backup with that. But your stories and you can like think about something that makes you laugh and incorporate that as a little story into one of your tricks. Which trick is going to make people laugh? You know, how are you going to shoehorn that into? I have a story about, I didn't show it to you guys. There's a trick with there's a kind of a wallet within a wallet. So I can show you this. And I won't show you the trick, but it ends up with this. And I borrowed someone's ring and I do a trick with a ribbon and a string. And in a wedding situation as well, if they've just got married, it's pretty trusting for them to give you their ring. And you make the ring onto a string and vanish and reappear and disappear. It's with this thing here. So lots of tricks with this, so with the ring, and the ring goes back on, it goes off, it disappears, it comes back. And then hands empty, sleeves rolled up, I have nothing. And I get this out of my pocket and I say, you know, have you ever heard of Russian dolls? And everyone's like, yeah, I've heard of Russian dolls. And I say, oh, I hate Russian dolls. And they look at me like, oh, they're so full of themselves. And then I'm doing this. But this, and then I say, and it's a relevant joke because this is a Russian wallet. Inside this wallet is another little wallet. You know, and so, and then inside this one is another, you know, something other than that. Anyway, you get the idea of the trick. Is another little wallet, and inside this one is another little wallet, and then inside this one is a folded thing, and inside this, you know, you undo this one at a time, and their ring is in there, and their face, then you do the wow face, right, because you know that they're like, oh my god, and so you go, you know, amazing. But your story then, your jokes and your silly little stories, they become part of your, for me, part of my professional working set, and like the difference between where I am and where you guys are, it's just about probably 6 months, 6 months to a year of work. You know, and it's not loads of work. It's like one evening a week work.
I love the way you're humouring us there, Tom.
Well, you know, okay. So that's the difference between where I was when I first started taking on gigs and being prepared to be, okay, I am the magician wandering around at this place. I might be volunteering today, not getting paid to do this. But I am. They have told everyone at this event, all 60 people that are there, that there's going to be a magician there. Like the UC now, it might be through some friends of friends that you start getting interested. Like, oh, you know, we should come over and do this thing. We've got a group of us. It's a birthday party. Would you bring your tricks? And at some stage, you're going to have to sort of decide, you know, am I going to? And yeah, you might do it voluntary for a while. But after a while, you'll realize that that doesn't work either. So maybe it'll turn into a little side business. And it could, absolutely, it's exactly what happened to me. I had no expectation for magic to become a work thing. I just got busier and busier and then became my full-time work.
As you're speaking, Tom, Sinan is Googling Russian wallets on Amazon to order.
Tomorrow. It's going to happen.
this one, we'll chat about it, you know, afterwards if you guys like, but on WhatsApp. This one won Trick of the Year. It was probably about 2014 or something. It won Trick of the Year. And the great thing is you hand out each wallet and there's nothing gimmicked about them. They're just, and how they're like how my ring got from where it was a second ago inside three wallets and inside a bit of silk, you know, which is solid. You know, anyway, so the trick has the wow factor. It won Trick of the Year. And it's, you know, there's a guy called Nicholas Einhorn, I think, who does a good version of it, if you want a little trick to find it. But
I was starting to think a bit about, like, the surprise. So I was thinking about the trick where we split the deck into red and black. So actually, it initially starts out with 1, 2, 2, 1, 1. Or if you could get them roughly into the same thing. So that becomes the task.
That's the skill task, yeah.
Yeah, then the surprise is actually the task wasn't this, it was something else. So once again, gets me thinking about coaching and how often do we create moments of surprise, which is, for me, is super important for young people. I love being surprised. Like,
yeah,
cool, isn't it?
It is really cool, isn't it? And it almost goes back to like the Karate Kid or something, you know, where he's like wax on, wax off. But the surprise comes later where he's like, oh my God, that thing is like, you know, I can actually use these moves to fight and achieve my dreams.
How does a session plan look for you, Tom? So you walk into a room, you possibly don't know people in there, you've got some idea, have you got a fixed set? Is it, oh, hang on a second, Sinan's over there, it looks like he's going to be quite cynical, and Tom's over there, and he thinks this, and Benji's over there, what does it look like for you going into a room and performing magic? And are you constantly adapting? Are you responding to people? If someone's become boisterous, have you got coaching solutions for that? Just talk me through.
Yeah. So then there's different types of gigs, I guess. Weddings would be difficult. Different to a restaurant gig would be different to a sort of, just like a cocktail evening party thing. And then I do a stage show as well, which is different again, where I'm at the front and I'm more like everyone's paid a ticket to come and see me. Those are the ones I'm actually enjoying the most, because that's where the real storytelling aspect can really come to fruition. I'm not going to go to a wedding and do the thread trick, right, that I taught you guys. It's just not suitable. It's never going to come out. I don't even put it in my pocket.
You could get the bands to play your music. You could go click bands.
Yeah, that's it. But I think so. So it's different for each, but let's talk about that sort of more of a normal gig. Maybe it's a party or a wedding where you've got groups of people socializing and you're employed to be the magician and go around. And ideally everyone knows that you're there. I prefer it when they're open with their guests about the fact that there's a magician going around, and they maybe even do an announcement. And why not even ask them to say, you know, in the speeches after the, you know, after the speeches, we're really excited to have Tom Lovington. He's here from the Magic Circle. He's going to be coming to your table, sharing some magic with you. And we've asked him to do that as a bridal group. That really helps. If they don't do that, or aren't prepared to do that, then I'll do it for them. I'll walk up to the table and say, hi there. You know, I've been asked by the bride and groom to provide some entertainment today. I'm the magician. Would you like to do some magic? And, you know, people aren't really in a position to say bugger off then, are they? Because, you know, it's their day. It's the bride and groom's day. And hopefully then you start with an opener. And we talked about our beginning, middle, and an end. So that gets condensed to 5 minutes. You have to have a beginning, middle, and an end for that table. And it will get interrupted by someone bringing over a drink, someone else coming to say hello, blah, blah, blah. You have to clear a space. So that whole skill set is something you learn But your tricks have to be unconsciously competent before you wade into a situation like that. So my advice for anyone having a go at starting to perform magic, even if it's on a fun basis, is just to ask people to be nice to people, walk over, be yourself, say hello, and then create a nice environment by clearing away, asking politely, could I just squeeze in here? Is it okay? Just move those bottles so everyone can see. Just have a look, make some eye contact around the table. I'd just be genuine, you know, and do nice tricks. And I think I've never had any real problem with hecklers, and I don't know if that's just because of my character, or maybe because I've got shaved head, I look like a beefcake, and no one wants to give me any grief. But I have had the odd kind of like, oh yeah, come over here, you're gonna make my wife disappear kind of thing, and you always get that. And so I tend to just be polite and laugh it off. There are lots of responses you can go for that, you know, and might suit your character. You can make funny jokes. There's even one magician who keeps all the stock responses on a folded bits of paper. So what he'll do is he'll clock that. So someone will say that. Someone else will say, oh, can you, you should be on Britain's Got Talent or something. So they'll have a piece of paper for that. They'll have a piece of paper for everything. They'll pass the bit of paper to the person who said, can you make my wife disappear? So don't look at that. I'm just going to give that to you in a minute. Then they'll do a trick. And the trick will end up with the person who's got the bit of paper, open it up, and it's like the person who said, can you make my wife disappear, will have the King of Diamonds in their pocket. And they reach in, they go, oh, you know, suddenly they're part of the trick, and it's quite good fun. And you've thought about it's a what if question, isn't it? So if you've got hecklers, what suits your character? How are you going to deal with it? For me, I just get embarrassed and laugh it off and move on, and people don't tend to give me any grief. You know, I live in a nice part of the country. And I don't get too much grief. But yeah, a lot of it comes down to how you approach and how you are with people.
Nice. And have you guys, Ben, Sinan, have you guys been thinking like this? Have you started to go putting together a set, start, middle, end, storytelling? What if someone says, can you make my wife disappear? Have you guys got that far? I haven't, by the way.
I haven't yet.
I guess just cry and run away is the kind of one that I've kind of got. But I definitely, if I'm looking back over things that I have done whereby I am presenting or talking to a group of people and people are making fun or whatever, I can always throw it back on them and I deal with it in that kind of like classic comedian way and kind of like make them the focus of attention and get them to kind of like, you know, share their fun. It's fine. I'm okay with it. And like you said, just laugh it off. So I'm good with that. That's the way that I'm comfortable dealing with that.
I was thinking from a coaching point of view, and I'm going to come to you in a second, Tom, and ask you about innovation in magic. But I was actually thinking from a coaching point of view, wouldn't it be amazing if there was a magic circle for coaches and there was a under 12 D team in, I don't know, let's pick somewhere anywhere in the country, Ashby de la Zouche, because it's in the middle of the country. And in order to get into the magic circle, you had to go and get coach the under 12 D team, and they had to give you the thumbs up. And if you got one thumb down, you weren't in the magic circle. And you get, how many goes do you get, Tom, to be in the magic circle? Is it like your driving test, you can have as many as you want, or do you get two or three? What's the...
It's more on a time, so I mean, a two-year period, you join as an apprentice. Most people join as an apprentice. And then once you're in as an apprentice, you've got 2 years within which to pass your exam. And you can present for that exam as many times as you want, but realistically, you're probably not going to get in the diary more than two or three times in that two-year period. It's a 10-minute exam. Normally, you would have to go to the headquarters in London, perform it live, unless you had a good excuse, but with the pandemic, I know they've been accepting videos more readily for people's presentations, 10-minute exam. They're very strict. They are really strict. It's tough to get in. It's the most difficult magic club in the world to get into, I think. I was already working as a magician when I first took my exam, and I wasn't successful. I was nearly there. Looking back, it was great that they didn't pass me, because I was kind of probably a bit cocky and thought I knew it all, but actually I had a lot to learn. And so I represented a year later and passed with flying colours. And having learnt an awful lot, becoming a bit more humble in the process, I think. But it's really tough to get in. It's hard to get in even as an apprentice. You have to have a good level of magic knowledge and understanding and sleight of hand. at your apprenticeship interview. And you don't want to become an apprentice until you're good at magic, because you've only then got 2 years within which to pass your exam. Unless you're totally determined and you've got nothing else to do with your life, it just takes a little time to get really good at all the different bits of magic. So yeah, but once you're in, I can't tell you how much of a lovely group of people, and eclectic, random, and very weird, some of them, you know, myself included, I'm sure, but you know, it's a fantastic group of people. It's only about 2,000 members worldwide, and the headquarters in London is worth visiting. Even as a non-member, you can go there. They have nights which are open to the general public once this pandemic thing's over with, but you can go along and watch theatre nights. They've got the theatre, there's a library, there's a museum. It's in central London near Euston Station. And so, yeah, you can go in there. They do Christmas shows, family shows and all sorts, and you get to see that, watch the magic as a punter, you know, as a spectator, as an audience, and go and see if it's something you want to be part of. But
and I'm asking for Sinan, what's the so apprentice is the bottom of the magic circle. What's the top job? What's the job that Sinan's out to get? Is it like chief sorcerer, chief wizard? What's the
president of the magic circle? I guess at the moment it's a chap called Noel Britton. He runs. I think he still does run something called Bizarre Bath, which is a magical walk around Bath. It's been running for about 30 years, and he ran for president this year. But there's also, you work your way up through member of the magic circle, then you become you can associate of the inner magic circle, which is AIMC, and then the final sort of one is member of the inner magic circle, MIMC, and then you get different starred levels of that. So if you're MIMC gold star, that means you achieved your MIMC through practical demonstration of magic, not through being a professor of magic or writing books. So you actually perform magic. So I think most magicians are thinking that's the highest level is MIMC gold star. People like, you know, and they only have 100 of those. They're only allowed to have, it's written in the rules, they're only allowed to have 100 of those at any one time. And I think at the moment they're less than 100. So there are not 100 people on this planet who are good enough to have MIMC gold star currently. You're not examined at that level, you're just given it.
What I heard you say is there's a chance.
Ah, yes, there is indeed. Isn't it lovely? There's levels
available for people
to know that. Does an MIMC need to be able to do this?
Oh yeah, that's an important. Yeah. Oh mate, that was good. I like that. That was very
nice.
What was your? Tell me about your level three, actually, Sinan, just quickly, because
that's your. So super quickly, the portfolio based learning was fantastic. Like in the sense that, you know, you really are given a chance to reflect for yourself. Now, the horrible part of it was videoing myself doing stuff. And that was going to be one of my questions for Tom. Like, how many times in your learning process did you kind of video yourself and just watch yourself doing bad things? Or, I mean, no, I'm not going to say that, but, you know, the process of kind of watching back your videos and picking it apart and then saying, okay, well, who am I? Why am I doing this? What's the whole point? What is the whole point? And then being able to kind of then present that back to say, I did make a difference. I did, you know, try and do a thing. And like Tom said, you find your style much quicker and much easier because a few have been laid out in front of you. Why don't you try the cards? Cards don't work for me. Why don't you try the balls? Balls are pretty good. Why don't you try the disappearing ring in a wallet thing? No, that doesn't work for me. Okay, balls it is. Okay, so I'm going to be a ball guy. So I'm going to go around and do that. And that was really interesting for me. So kind of coming out of the back of that, I just felt like I'd been released. It sounds a little bit philosophical, but you know, by putting a portfolio of practical work together, testing it out, watching myself doing it, and then coming out the other side saying, okay, that worked for me.
Video analysis is absolutely amazing. It's so good to do. And for me, for stage show, I do it, I test out my routines in front of the camera and watch it back. As you say, it's painful, but you get to see when you say, but how you're looking, how you're sitting, you know, at what the audience can see. And you know, yeah, it's such a great tool. And so easy to set up a phone with video on, right? Just stick it on the shelf, pointing at you and press play and do your routine, start to finish. That's rehearsal as opposed to practice, right? And then watch it back. and see how you did. It's hard, but it's really, really useful.
And how does innovation happen in magic? Are people, I mean, is it open? You can share, people share stuff, or do they keep their little special tricks to themselves? So what's amazed me is that, you know, our WhatsApp group, people are putting stuff on, and I can pick up a trick like that someone else has invented. I mean, it's pretty cool. I think my sense in lots of sports is that we don't share. How does innovation happen, Tom?
Well, I guess there's some magicians who pride themselves in just being innovators of magic. And let me think of an example. There's a guy called Angelo Carboni, who I know within the magic circle. He doesn't really perform magic. He just invents magic. And he's extremely innovative in his approach and in his thinking. And so he'll bring things to market over a long period of testing that are new ideas, new tricks, new ways of achieving some prediction effect or whatever. And his methods and his thinking are amazing. So you can become a member of the Magic Circle by just doing that. And then there's people like somewhere in between. I feel like I'm somewhere in between, where I take lots of ideas of sleight of hand and tricks that I know, and I merge them together into something that I'm happy to perform, put them together with a script that I like, and that becomes my version of the trick. So the innovation, the innovative kind of aspect of creating a new trick really comes from adding your take on it. But I'm not inventing moves. I'm not sort of saying, this is how the best way I think that you should do this particular color change or this movement of the ball or the card or the coin. And I'm not inventing, you know, I'm not at the one who's making these things, or I don't know, you know, being innovative in magic. But I think, yeah, I think it's important to, as I said, just to make the tricks your own, and then think about how you're going to get from start to finish at the end of your routine, what you're going to do first, what you're going to do last. What drives innovation for me is when I want to do a show on a particular thing. So I've recently done a show where I wanted to really focus on how incredible it is to be alive, and the solar system, and the biggest star in our solar system is so big. So how can I communicate to people how big that is? What story can I tell? And so I ended up with a yellow balloon with a tiny dot with a Sharpie on it, which then became a bottle of rum, which I then drank, la, la, la. And it's just one thing after another. So there's some innovation in storytelling in magic that linked together nicely. Driven by the stories.
Yeah, I like the story around the just that, no, you know, it's unlikely that a hand of cards has been dealt before.
You know, that's a nice true thing, isn't it? Like the 52 factorial is an absolutely gigantic number. It's huge, you know. And if you, yeah, so I went online and watched this amazing thing, and I think when you're, and this is the same for coaching you guys, I'm sure, is when you hear something or read something that makes you go, wow, that's amazing, I've never thought of that. Then add it to your phone, put it in a note, put it in Google Keep, put the link to that website somewhere that you can get back to it. So I've got endless folders of magic with scripting magic. And I'll also talk about quantum mechanics, because that to me is real magic. The fact that we can, at least at the level of particles, one can disappear from a place and reappear in another. We can teleport particles. And also quantum entanglement is real magic too, right? It's, and a nice easy way to explain that, it might be with a coin trick. You'd say this one is either heads or tails. And if you flip this one, it's 50-50. It's heads or tails, heads or tails, heads or tails. But if these two coins, this coin is also heads or tails, and it's also random. But if you do it enough times, it'll come out 50-50, heads or tails. But what's amazing is when if you were a scientist by this coin and a scientist by this coin, and you compared notes, every single time, if they were entangled, you know, scientifically, quantumly, every time this one was heads, this one was tails. Every time this one landed heads, right, this one would always land tails. And there's no link between them. We've proved that, you know, that's basically what quantum mechanics is. And every time this one was tails, this one was heads. And so somehow that happens simultaneously. You know, the whole Schrodinger's cat thing, you know, incredible kind of really deep level of our world is built on actual pretty amazing science and magic, you know, quantum mechanics. And I won't talk about it, but the same thing as how helium is produced in the sun is with, is basically another quantum effect where it just shouldn't happen. It's quantum tunneling, where a particle should bounce back, and it, a million times it will. On the one occasion, it'll disappear, reappear on the other side, and keep going. And if that didn't happen, we wouldn't have helium, which means we wouldn't have life on Earth. You know, nothing would be here. So, I like talking about that. To me, that's real magic, and I can get excited about those stories, and so I'll tell them in my show. But I try and keep it simple, make it, you know, I'm not a scientist, so that's quite easy for me to keep it simple.
Nice. Well, if nothing else, you've reinforced the fact I have terrible magic stories. So I appreciate
all I'm saying is when you see a good story, write it down and then think, right, how am I going to relate that to this trick? And I bet you've got great stories. So the biggest question you must ask yourself with your stories is this: how do I want to make people feel? As simple as that. How do I want to make people feel? And for me, I want to make people feel lucky to be alive. That's my absolute crystal clear goal for my magic. And I want to make people smile. I want to create astonishment. I'll do all those other things, but that's what I want to achieve. If I could achieve the best magic show ever, at the end of it, people will feel more grateful and more happy to be alive, and to feel how wonderful that feels to be here on Earth, spinning along in this crazy world we live in. But isn't it beautiful and isn't it wonderful? That's what I want people to feel. Nice. If you can find, yeah. So yeah, that's it. That's it for me. And that's what gives me motivation to practice tricks and get slights down and everything else. For years and years and years now, I've been doing magic, 25 years. So
nice. And that would be a pretty good way to finish, because that would probably be what we would want from every coaching session we ever do, hopefully. Maybe some people need to realise that. Where can people get hold of you, Tom? What's the best means to get hold of you?
My magic business is called Seriously Good Magic, and I'm on most social media platforms, and if you type that into Google, you'll find me, seriouslygoodmagic.com. And yeah, do get in touch and say hello. Zoom shows on the parties, weddings, events, anything. And also, I love to teach magic, because you do need to step forward. It's something you know it has to be paid for. I'm not going to teach magic on YouTube for free to anyone and everyone, because there's so many people out there who don't want to know how things are done, and more than happy for them to stay that way. So but I do love teaching magic. It's something I never had. I just had to read the books and watch the DVDs, and so yeah.
Nice. Ben, Sinan, thanks for joining us. 10 seconds each. Sell Tom Luddington, Seriously Good Magic. What have you got for us?
He made me believe I can do magic.
That's good. That was less than 10 seconds.
Yeah.
That work. Sinan, what have you got?
Am I allowed to just repeat that? But no, absolutely. There is that level of engagement, that level of kind of belief within himself that he's going to kind of captivate you, which makes me think that I can go and captivate other people. That's what I got, and that's what I believe. And then also buying all this crap. not crap, but you know.
Nice. Look, I would endorse that. It's been really cool. I'm definitely missing it as well. I think we're going to hopefully maybe try and see if we can get a bit of a magic group going on this.
I was going to say we have a magic off or something.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely be. Definitely want to try and get in the magic circle of coaching at some point as well. So, look, thanks everyone. Really appreciate your time. Tom, happy sailing. Fair play.
Thanks very much. Yeah, exciting times. Hopefully heading across the Bay of Biscay, over to straight out 5 days, 5 nights at sea, over to Northern Spain and then onwards. So, but I'm hoping I'm going to run one of these courses again, maybe in the autumn. I know I've got a few people that are keen again, so 10 places max. And cool. Hey, if you guys are missing it, let's do unleash the magic within level 2. No, you know, because I've got so much more to teach you, tell you. And if the numbers start to, you know, if we get a smaller group, I can do more.
We're doing it. I can't do it the next 2 weeks, but I'll do it after that.
I can't either, so that suits me. Yeah, let's do it in a month or two or something. We'll do
cool.
That.
Well, look, thanks everyone. Have an awesome day, and I'll catch you soon.
Nice one. Thank you, Russell, for your time and for everything as well. It's been great.
Cool. Cheers, guys.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Sinan. Lovely to meet you all.
Cheers. See you soon.